Our presentation is entitled Alive, Survive, Strive, and Thrive, The Journey of Suffering. You can turn on the news or perhaps take a look outside your own window and you'll see how we are suffering as a church, as a nation, as a world. We see with the COVID-19 pandemic, we see racism, civil unrest, and the long list continues. Or perhaps you may say, I don't have to look very far. I can look within my own home or even within myself, my own heart, and see that I myself am struggling, whether physically with a chronic illness or mentally with depression, anxiety, financially, socially, spiritually. And again, the long list continues. So the question is, how do I cope with this suffering? How do we cope with this suffering? Do we just try to stay alive or survive, get through life? Or what if we could strive and even thrive? That is our goal. Is it even possible to thrive on a journey of suffering? We'll be discussing some skills of how to cope with suffering and most importantly, unravel the key to thriving. And so my name again is Dr. Katie Elson, and it is a joy to share this because again, it is so relevant to what we're going through, again, as collectively, as individuals, as well as individually in our own lives. And so I'm just going to quickly talk about the shared experience of pain. So pain is inevitable. And I already alluded to some of these. We see that collectively we're suffering at a global and societal level. We see protests, riots, looting, racism, the quarantine and the isolation and all the effects that that has brought about, even the physical health aspect of the pandemic. We see on the family level, divorce, domestic violence, which the rates have gone up dramatically with this coronavirus, broken families, and these are just to name a few. At the church level as well, even within the church, we see broken churches or disconnect from the community. Individually, we see individuals struggling with physical illness, chronic, serious, and terminal illness as well. I work with the palliative care population, so I see this day in, day out. And here are just a few of the many diagnoses that cause an ongoing suffering. Fibromyalgia, arthritis, cancer. We know that the prevalence rates of these things are so high these days. People are struggling physically. And even with COVID, it's not just the fear and the panic, but even our loved ones dying in very inhumane ways. Mentally, we are struggling. One in five in America, and then one in four in other parts of the country and of the world, struggling with a mental illness, depression, anxiety, trauma, suicidal thoughts, just to name a few. Spiritually as well, struggling. And so with this struggle, with this suffering, how do we cope? And I want to quickly review how we typically cope. So kind of to first address how we cope and how we should be coping instead. So how do we cope? I'll be using an analogy of sailing in life just to kind of make it more present and applicable to us. And so the first step, again, this journey of suffering, a lot of us are barely just alive. So you're alive, you're breathing, you have a pulse, but you have no hope, joy, meaning, or even drive to want more or to make change in your life. You know, and no one starts this way. I want to clarify that. No one starts this way. Often it's because of the struggles in life and after suffering for a while that perhaps you get used to, that it becomes a routine and in some ways a way of life. Again, just alive, going through the motions. And so if this was an analogy of a boat, for instance, perhaps you were in the boat and you've had a lot of waves and storms and you tried fighting it, but you've just kind of given up. So now you're just kind of floating in the middle of the ocean and maybe a storm comes, we hide in the cabin, wait for it to pass. And it actually seems a little bit more pleasant because you don't feel like you have to struggle or fight the storm, but also you're not going anywhere. You're stuck. You're trapped in the middle of the ocean, and there's no progress in life. Some of us, when we struggle with suffering, we just are alive. Others are barely surviving. So maybe, you know, there are still struggles, but now you have a bit more effort and wanting to address them, not completely, but just a little bit more energy, a little bit more effort. but not enough to actually feel like you're striving or thriving in life. And so again, going back to the boat illustration, this might look like, you know, you're tired of just sitting in the middle of the ocean. So you start to steer a bit or maybe put up the sails, but still not that much effort. And so you're still without direction. But then striving comes. And again, there are struggles, but you're beginning to experience more hope. You begin to think that what if life could be different? What if I didn't have to struggle all the time? And you realize maybe you have a little bit more control of your life than you recognize. And so you begin to make some changes. Again, going back to the boat, perhaps you decide to get a new boat because the boat was causing you difficulty, or maybe you enrolled in a class of learning how to better sail. You're making some efforts, but still kind of struggling. And again, throughout all these illustrations and examples, asking the question, which one's me? And then there's thriving. You guessed it, there's still struggles. So you notice that no matter what step you're in, there will always be struggles. But now this time with thriving, there's also hope as it was with striving, but there's something almost strange and odd about your reaction. It's almost as if the struggles don't bother you so much. And in some ways, maybe you even welcome them. That sounds a little odd, right? So to give again an example, maybe so you got the new equipment, or maybe you took a lesson and now not only, you know, new lesson and a new boat perhaps, but you also have a different attitude. You no longer see the waves as challenges. You see them as an adventure, as something that you can conquer. And your perspective, again, changes. And even in some ways, maybe the calmness of the ocean becomes almost something that you don't enjoy because you want to grow and challenge yourself. And so is this you, right? And this is what we want to strive for. We want to not just be alive. We don't just want to be surviving. We may start making efforts to strive, and we ultimately want to thrive. So the question is, how can I thrive? And subtitled, Making Meaning in Suffering, which sounds, again, odd. So the first step is acceptance, and there's kind of sub-steps to all of this. But the first step of thriving during suffering is acceptance. So mind shift. Most of us think that life and the pursuit of life is happiness. We want to attain happiness, but happiness is very fleeting. And not only is it fleeting, but it's almost impossible because of the fact that we live in a very broken and difficult world. And so not only do we strive for happiness, but we often try to avoid suffering. But what's interesting is what we avoid, and we teach this often in therapy, is what we often avoid grows. So for example, if you avoid the weeds, what happens? They grow. And so we shouldn't be avoiding suffering. Is there a different way in which we should approach suffering? Instead, we need to accept the pain and the suffering. We have to accept it because pain is inevitable. So Dr. Viktor Frankl, he was a psychiatrist, and I'll give you the first part of this quote because I'll give you the second part later. But he says, to live is to suffer. And just to give a little bit more information about Dr. Viktor Frankl, he wrote a book named Man's Search for Meaning, and he was a survivor of the concentration camps. And so he learned the first part, to live is to suffer. And so again, pain is inevitable. And as we understand that and accept that, then our approach to suffering will start to change. The next point is, don't compare your sufferings. We hear this all the time. I hear this, you know, in palliative care when a patient's going through something, and either they'll exaggerate their own, say mine's the worst, or sometimes even diminish. Oh, I know somebody's going through something worse. But don't compare sufferings. Dr. Viktor Frankl gives an analogy that man's suffering is similar to the behavior of gas. If a certain quantity of gas is pumped into an empty chamber, it will fill the chamber completely and evenly. no matter how big the chamber. Thus, suffering completely fills the human person and their mind, no matter whether the suffering is great or little. So suffering cannot be comparable. And that's really important, because that means you're accepting that no matter what it is, it's not greater than someone else's, it's not less than someone else's, it's your suffering, and that's okay. So, and furthermore, comparing either invalidates your suffering, which avoids your suffering again, or exaggerates, which often leads to pity and isolation. Nobody can understand what I'm going through. But acceptance leads to interaction and connection with others. This last one, I love this point. Accept and let go that we are not in control of circumstances. Someone might say, we're not in control. Isn't that saying that, kind of giving license to us not coping, not taking control of our lives? There's a difference here. So Dr. Viktor Frankl says this. He says, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. You'll notice I'm quoting him a lot, because he talks a lot about suffering and how to deal with suffering. So he says, when we are no longer able to change a situation, we are challenged to change ourselves. This is also a key concept in cognitive behavioral therapy, that when we accept the idea that we cannot control people's situations, circumstances, we recognize that we ourselves have a lot more control than what we recognize. So we are challenged to change ourselves. When I'm going through suffering and I say, why did I lose my job? Or why did my spouse do this to me? We are challenged to reflect inwardly and see that what we can control and how we can change ourselves in response to that suffering. So to give an example, you can't change what your father did to you. We often talk about that in therapy, of your past and how your past impacts your current present. But you can accept it by forgiving and then making it a part of your story of growth and victory. You can't change that you have cancer, but you can accept it and ask yourself, what meaning can I make of this? I can't control the coronavirus. No one can. But you can accept that it's been difficult, and you can ask ways in which that you have control to make it better. My past or my current sufferings don't define who I am. They're part of my journey, perhaps a chapter in my book, but my book is still being written. The second step is finding and making meaning of suffering. So here you see the last part of the quote that I shared earlier: to live is to suffer. So suffering is inevitable. To survive or to thrive is to find some meaning in that suffering. And so we can see examples of Dr. Viktor Frankl, of Nick, I'm going to butcher his name, Wushkik, Bethany Hamilton, Joni Erickson Tada. These are examples of individuals who endured extreme suffering, and yet they became victorious. And so Nick Wushkik, he was born without limbs, and he is a motivational speaker, and he has used his experience to benefit himself and others. Bethany Hamilton, she was the one who had her arm bitten off by a shark. She didn't say, okay, woe is me. We often start there, right? We need a moment of woe is me. But then she said, how can I utilize this suffering, make meaning of it, and contribute to others? And there we see also Job. Most people don't know that the book of Job in the Bible was the first book written. And that tells me a lot about God, that God knew that we would struggle with suffering, and he wanted to provide a book that addressed why the suffering and how to cope. And Job stayed faithful, and he received many blessings as a result of it. Choice is huge. We have a choice to how we respond to our suffering. There's a quote that says, between the stimulus and response, right? Between an event and how we respond to it, there's a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. We have a choice. The same way Dr. Viktor Frankl and others had a choice. So his wife, his daughter, and I believe his parents as well, they all died in the concentration camps. And yet he chose to live a life of meaning and to give back to others. And so no matter the most horrible of circumstances, you can choose how to respond. And it's not a grand meaning or purpose of life. Often we think that making meaning means, oh, I need to do something great as these people. But what is often encouraged and what we encourage in therapy is to ask, what is your purpose day by day? And maybe even moment by moment. You may say, okay, what's one thing I can do today? What's one thing that I can do in this moment? You go to your work, what's one thing? And you notice that by having those goals and by having that meaning and purpose, life no longer becomes a I'm breathing and I have a pulse and I'm barely alive or surviving my suffering, but I'm actually thriving. And realize that character and it's important to accept suffering and make meaning because it builds character. This is a biblical concept that we see. It says, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. Why? Because it produces character. You grow as a person. And again, pain is inevitable, but those who are strongest and most successful in life are those who allow for it to grow them and to motivate them. And then also make it other-centered. Often with suffering, we say, woe is me, but focus on others. And when you focus on others, you're able to then not only bless yourself, turn that suffering into a blessing for yourself, but also to others. And so I want to quickly close with the key to thriving also is by someone else who made the ultimate meaning of suffering. And that is Jesus Christ. It says in Isaiah 53 that by his stripes, we are healed. We often as a Christian community emphasize his death and resurrection. But then you ask, why did Jesus then come as a baby? Why did he live 33 and a half years? And that's because the Bible tells us that he came because he had to suffer. He chose. He chose to come as a baby to suffer in all points as we have. And so there's some references here. And I love Hebrews 4:15 because it says, we do not have a high priest, Jesus, who cannot sympathize, meaning we do. He can sympathize. He's suffered in all ways so that we can have somebody who can give us comfort during that suffering. I love this. This is a definition of suffering. It says to submit to or be forced to endure, to feel keenly or to put up with, to undergo, to experience. And what Jesus did is Jesus didn't say, I'm going to be a faraway God that sees your suffering. But he says, I want to come down in the flesh and be able to submit to undergo, to experience the suffering as well. And you notice that he suffered in many ways. He was alone, abandoned, betrayed. He felt forsaken by God. And so we have somebody that can empathize with every single suffering. That's number one. Number two, I have a personal God that is present with me in every suffering. Isn't that beautiful? And then three, he suffered so that I do not have to carry this cross of suffering alone. And Jesus not only empathizes with our pain, but he also has the power to heal our pain. It says that he's moved with compassion. Compassion means to suffer with. So as he understands what the suffering is, he extends to us his healing. Lastly, pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Some of you may have heard this before, that pain is kind of the physiological component, the physical component of what we suffer, right? Pain is inevitable. Something happens and we feel that pain. But suffering, often they believe to be optional because suffering includes the thoughts and emotional experiences, the interpretations that we have. So for example, if I say, this is the worst thing possible that has ever happened to me, that phrase in itself is what leads pain to becoming suffering. But I want to say here that suffering is optional because we know we all endure pain, but that Christ himself, he endured the suffering so that we don't have to. And so how do you thrive in life? Is you thrive by accepting that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. How do you make meaning of that and how to find the most meaning out of that? By looking to Jesus and seeing that he suffered on your behalf. And I know we have some questions that we wanted to end with. So Dr. Ramirez.
Thank you so much for such an insightful presentation. We have a couple of questions. So first question is, what to do with such a painful past. How can I overcome that?
Great question. So a lot of people have this confusion of, do I have to kind of dig up my past in order to have healing? And I always say, you know, if your past is buried and you've moved on from it, leave it there. But if your past becomes your present in the sense that you're reliving it, then you do need to address your past. How do you do that? It's not something that I can give a bullet point list, but I would encourage you to seek further help, whether it's a mental health professional, a community. But often it's going back to your past, seeing what was hurtful, what as a result of the thoughts, the beliefs that you have about yourself, and then kind of challenging those in a way that brings healing.
I notice that as I go to sleep, my thoughts start racing. What can I do to relax and calm down?
Yeah, so one thing, deep breathing. So deep diaphragmatic breathing is one that we often recommend as just as a way to get your body and your mind more relaxed. So kind of a precursor to even working on your thoughts. So just doing a couple of deep breaths using your diaphragm. What you can do with that is also, if you're not sure exactly how to do it, you can just Google diaphragmatic breathing or deep breathing. There's YouTube videos. There's little kind of blurbs of what you can do. And then often kind of ask yourself, what's the root of those racing thoughts? If it's because you're worried about the next day, I often recommend to my patients just to schedule a worry time before their bed. So an hour before bed, write down all the things that you're worried about, your racing thoughts. And then once you're in bed, then if those thoughts pop up again, you say, I already dealt with them. I already kind of found a solution for them. And then that you're able to kind of calm your mind. So deep breathing plus scheduling some worry time before you actually get into bed.
And I have one last question. How can I forgive somebody that hurt me so much?
Yeah, that's a good question. And something I think many of us struggle with. And I think many of us don't talk about that struggle. First off, I think just better understanding what forgiveness is. So many people don't forgive because they think that forgiveness is condoning what that person did to you. It's not that. If whatever they did to you, often, like for instance, you know, an abuser or somebody who hurt you in a certain way, they say, you know, I don't want to forgive because that's saying it was okay. It's not okay what they did. It's not okay how it hurt you. And so recognizing that that is not forgiveness. And so forgiveness is actually letting go in a way that's beneficial to you. And so I would say, you know, bring that before the Lord and encourage them, encourage you to say, God, like, help me because I can't do this on my own.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.